very good morning. I hope you all have collected yourself after this very, very windy, gusty weekend. In my particular area, I saw at least three trees that were blown over in that area. Very, very busy weekend for disaster management. That's why we're going to be checking in with him at about 20 past nine about what has been happening in the city with these gusting winds that we've been experiencing. What I absolutely love this time of the year are those news videos and those news clips of people who stand outside the Civic Center, news crews who stand outside the Civic Center around about the area of the Artscape and just watch people get blown to absolute smithereens. It is absolutely hilarious, but at the same time, one has to ask, when we ever designed the city, we ever designed the foreshore, did they actually look ahead and realize they are creating a wind tunnel there? It's absolutely fascinating year in and year out, whether it be summer or winter, that wind tunnel that is created between that buildings, people trying to walk from the My City station to wherever they're going, particularly if they're walking from My City to the train station and back, absolutely blown to smithereens. And I want to ask the question, why hasn't the city dealt with it? Is there something they can do it, or is this a legacy that we're going to sit with for decades because of those wind tunnels that have been created by those buildings in those areas? If you've had an incident, if you want to reflect on your week, and particularly with regards to the wind, give me a call, 021-446-0567 or 072-567-1567. But I want to move on now and call it an orientation camp. Call it a team building. Call it a leadership program. Maybe just simply call it hazing. The tragic death of Enoch Mpianzi brought back issues of my school culture when I was, you know, a young person, you know, wanting to join a group. Look, we still don't know what happened there to that Parktown Boys High School group. But we do know is that Enoch was one of a few, if not the only child to start in this year's high school group who did not come from Parktown Junior School. And that feeling of wanting to be part of a group, yet quietly sitting by yourself, not wanting to make yourself and your presence feel big. You know, how someone can go totally unnoticed. I perfectly understand that. And over the last few days, talking to some of my mates, I reflected on the school culture that I was raised in. How when you become a dominant personality in school, or maybe even by the seniority of your grade, you then use that power negatively, you know, to assert power over those who are smaller and younger, or maybe even just different looking to you. Call it teasing or simply call it bullying. I have had to reconcile now, later in my life, that certain practices that I was part of could have been likened to bullying. Was simply stupid initiation practices, if you want to call it that. And here's a story about how even the most benign of initiation ceremonies or schoolhouse introductions, I now see as bullying. You see, I attended a school with a very, very strong house culture, sports house culture, particularly for athletics. And to this day, After you introduce yourself to someone and you find out which school you attended, if you happen to be old boys or old girls of that particular school, you immediately ask, what house did you belong to? That's how important, you know, this house identity was for the school that I attended. So when you start in standard 6 or grade 8, and the new kids are divided into new houses, and there's a period of the school program where new house members get introduced or initiated into the house. And as I said, on the face of it, a very, very benign process. And the new kids would line up, step onto a table, shout their name, and they would have to kiss the bum of a fluffy teddy bear. All harmless, right? Well, as at other schools, the matrix run the show. And out of them, the loudest, most popular, the cool kids, you know, have overall control. And so when kids would step on the table, those who were in charge would randomly stomp kids and ask them, or instruct them, to perform a task. Sing I'm a Little Teapot. Do a dance while the rest of us sing Happy Birthday. All harmless, right? But what I now realize, and I unfortunately realized only after I left school, was that these tasks and those that we called out weren't just at random. If you were tall, if you were short and mousy, if you were fat, if you had freckles, you were selected apparently at random. No, you were picked on. We picked on you. Yes, and there is, of course, the cheer and the high five and the screams of legend, yay! When you did the task at the moment, you had about 250 to 300 people bullying you for how you looked. And the only solace that you have is that you can do it to someone else next year. And it's actually quite tough, you know, to say that I participated in that. That I participated in another person's humiliation. And I take a little comfort that I'm now conscious of my behavior. And through that, I can now guide young people in my life and why they shouldn't be doing that. But coming back to Enoch, the bottom line is, I believe people must be charged, criminally charged for his death. And the camp officials should be investigated by the relevant government departments to ascertain whether they are in fact compliant. The school principal must resign immediately for how the school has handled this matter. It's handled it, in the most callous of ways. And the teachers must be suspended. They must be investigated. And if there is a case to answer for, they must be fired. None of the excuses that I have read, if I've been confronted with in the media, that I feel are satisfactory. And now, Enoch Mpianza is now dead. Simply because he is small, and simply because he is unseen. That's my little confession today, that I feel, although we don't know exactly what happened, I have linked this case to my previous behavior, being a schoolboy, school-going kid. And now I may have participated. Oh, no, not may have. I did participate. Maybe unbeknownst to me, a part of a hazing initiation ritual. And how I may have, I know how I have humiliated people simply for the way they look. I'd like your thoughts on this confession. Give me a call. 021-446-0567. Drop me that WhatsApp or a voice note. 072-567-1567.
Cape Talk. The Open Line. Call 021-446-0567.
Welcome back. 18 minutes past 9 o'clock. It is the Open Line here on today. Lester Kivett standing in for Keena Cummings. Let's go to the phone lines now. I think it's Paul in Durbanville. How are you doing, Paul?
Yeah, hi, Lester. How's it been?
Very good.
Listen, this young boy who died, there are a number of things that should have happened before they even left for the trip. And one of them is they should have all been put in the water polo pool or some swimming pool to see their swimming ability, because the teachers would have known they were going to build something on a murky, watered surface. Second of all, obviously, we know about the life jackets. Everybody's been phoning in about that. But now, you know, as the owner of a company, if my men mess up, I'm the one who has to take the fall, okay? So as far as I'm concerned, Parktown are essentially responsible, and possibly the owner of the caravan park, whoever they were. But I think it's not going to bring the boy back, but I do think Parktown have had a bit of a rough reputation following a few things in the last couple of years. And I do think it's about time they realize that underprivileged people, as opposed to privileged people, are disadvantaged in the fact that this young boy probably never even could swim. But nobody ever managed to find out. Nobody even gave a damn. So I think a large lawsuit, and I think Parktown needs to feel it in the pocket. This family needs to be compensated in a big way. And, I mean, it's all very well to blame the teacher. And, yes, the teacher also needs to be suspended. But the school, as a body, is primarily responsible.
Parktown, from as far as I know, is a public school. So, essentially, it will be the South African government who would then face legal ramifications if the family does decide to sue. But very right. People need to take responsibility. Paul there in Durbanville. Let's take Ross in Thornton. How are you doing, Ross?
Yeah, not terribly well, actually, Lester. Yeah. I'm very concerned. That last call as well illustrated my concern. It seems to have become fashionable, especially on talk radio, to have trial by media of particularly educators, and I have been teaching since 1971. I'm, of course, retired now. And it really needs one to just step back and take a look. I totally agree with the way in which one must eventually ask for there to be people held responsible. But at this stage, nobody can take responsibility because there hasn't been a full investigation. I really feel we've got to be very, very careful about this. And then when, of course, the law has run its course, trials have been done, then obviously blame can be apportioned. You know, I don't want to be facetious, but many of us know who the leaders of the Hard Livings gang is, or the Americans, or what, the 24s. And I don't see much public trial of them. As I say, I'm being a little bit facetious. But maybe because people are damn scared of them and they won't come out. Whereas a school teacher is a very easy target. And, I'm just asking for a little bit of sanity and holding back on this because it is extremely distressing. I'll grant you that. It is absolutely tragic. But we don't know the full facts, and the only full facts will come out after a really extensive and, of course, independent investigation into this sort of thing. But it is irresponsible to sort of just say, oh, such and such a school has got a name for this. I've taught in many schools and have been very, very vulnerable in this way, and eventually, you know, one's name is cleared. I don't want to go into that, but there can be a lot of damage done if one is allowed to speak irresponsibly.
I absolutely appreciate Ross there in Thornton. I appreciate that, and you know, growing up in families where education is runs quite deep, and many of my family members still involved in education, I understand the pressures that teachers are under, but at the same time, when a child leaves the family home, it gets dropped at school and enters those school gates or leaves on an excursion, that school acts in locus parentis. That school takes the responsibility of the well-being of that child. And from what we're hearing, and I have no problem stressing an opinion of mine, from what I'm reading and what I'm hearing, and creating an image in my mind, and that's why we stress, it's my opinion, and that's why we stress that not all the facts have come out, but I can't be blamed for drawing an opinion in my head. And if the school has failed in its duty to act in locus parentis, in act in the best interest of that child, but not even doing a roll call at the end of the day, without mentioning any names, and I haven't mentioned any names of any of the teachers or the principals or anybody involved besides Enoch, I still believe people should be held to account. Anne in Thornton, how are you doing today?
I'm fine, Lester, and I've been listening to you since you started. First of all, yes, sir, you are being facetious. I just heard you now talking about the gangs. What has that got to do with the topic on hand? So, yes, sir, you are being facetious. My second point is, Lester, as a mom, and I've been a teacher myself, question that I asked was, first of all, when the children got onto the bus, who stood at the door with a register and said, well, are all of the boys here? I've ticked off all of the boxes. Yes, they're there. Fine. The principal phoned the dad to ask, are you sure that your child went on the trip? Huh? No, well, where did that come? It means the teachers or the head prefect or whoever was in charge didn't do their job. And as an investigator, if I was an investigator, that would be the first thing that I would be looking for, the register. Secondly, the dad said we didn't have 800 rand for that life jacket. That meant already for me was that child was at risk. Mm. Because if they were going to go on the river, they have to have a jacket on. Mm. Which meant the senior person who was then responsible for the group who's going on that raft had to make that difficult decision, peer pressure or not. Say, young man, you cannot go on because you don't have a life jacket and you might fall in the water and there could be consequences. Nobody did that. Mm. Where was the teacher? Where was the head prefect? Or whoever was in charge?
In my view,
there was negligence and there completely. Was copping out. I'm very angry, very sad for the family.
You know what, Anne? I come from a school, particularly a primary and high school, that is far, far removed from Parktown Boys. And we've been on school camps where we've been taken away. And reflecting on a school that is so far worlds removed from a Parktown Boys, when we've been on anywhere close to rafting or water, there have been life jackets. There have been life jackets.
Jacket to that boy. And honest to goodness, how come nobody took a roll call when the boys came off the river? That was the Friday, the Thursday, or whichever day. Only the next day they realized that the child wasn't there. Negligence. My child, my grandchild, should never be going to a school trip of that time. And by the way, orientation on the first day. I listened to a teacher yesterday who phoned in and who said, who sends children on orientation the first day of school? They don't even know each other.
You do orientation at schools, Anne. You don't do orientation outside of the school.
Absolutely.
Then call it a camp. Call it a team building. But it's not an orientation. Anne in Thornton, thanks so much for your call there. Really appreciate it. But let's go to some of your voice notes. 072-567-1567.
Good morning, Lester. You mentioned the houses in school, and I remember my primary school very clearly, and the houses that we belonged to were Jupiter, Mercury, and Mars. And we had the war cries that we sang. But war cries weren't about war. It was about basically supporting your friends, and there was no way that we were bullying each other or feeling intimidated by the teams. It was purely for fun. I'm going to sing the song. I'll send a voice note with the one of the war cries we used to sing. I still remember it. And in this sad time, I know it's sad, but we are children going to school. They can still have a school spirit and a house spirit without being bullies and being competitive to the point where people are neglected and feel that they don't belong.
I am not. Thanks so much for that voice note, Karen. I really appreciate that sense of belonging, that belonging to a school community and a sports house at school really meant for me. It made me bond with people who were not in my grade, who I wouldn't necessarily hang out with. What I'm very disappointed, I'm very disgusted in myself, is that I was. We use that theory that we want to break you down and then build you up. I think that is absolutely disgusting, and I am very disappointed in myself that I was part of a culture that picked on people, not randomly, but because of the way they looked. And I think that is what's distressing. And I don't know if it still happens at schools, if you maybe know, if you know, initiation processes still happen at schools, but I really think they should stop. Why? Because I perpetrated it, and I'm disgusted in that I did that. But it's just coming up for Eyewitness News headlines at 9:30 at Charlotte Kilbane.
Good morning, Lester. The Human Rights Commission will today be meeting with the family of a teenager who drowned on a school camp. Parktown Boys High pupil Enoch Mpianzi drowned during a water activity in the Northwest last week.
Cape Talk. WhatsApp 072-567-1567.
Hi, good morning, Lester. Could we perhaps also just discuss the role or the importance that the indemnity form plays in all of this. As a parent, you simply just sign the indemnity form, and in effect, you know, you remove all responsibility from the school. Perhaps there needs to be some discussions around whether or not indemnity forms are an acceptable document that should be signed. Is it legal in a case like this? What's happened is that the child has passed away under the care of an organization who you have simply indemnified from any responsibility. So I think the discussion, or there needs to be a discussion about the indemnity forms that we are requested to sign. Cheers.
Thanks so much for that. As far as I understand, indemnity forms aren't worth the paper they're written on if there's found that there's been gross negligence on the part of the school or the building or the play park or the event that you're attending. That if there's been found to be gross negligence on the part of whoever is organizing the event or the caregiver or the play park where you've taken your child to, it means absolutely nothing. They are still liable for those damages. But at the same time, it's important, I believe, not just to sign at the bottom of the page. I know kids come at 8:30 in the morning just before they're supposed to go to school. Daddy, can you sign this quickly? And you sign, and then there you go. Take the time to read it. But maybe that is a discussion to have. Maybe that is someone, there is an opportunity to get someone on air, someone who's involved particularly in personal liability, in school governance, to come on air with us and to talk about that issue of indemnity forms at schools. But joining